Magical thinking refers to the idea that you can influence the outcome of specific events by doing something that has no bearing on the circumstances. It generally involves doing things you know, deep down, won't affect the final outcome. Healthline.com.
So Colleen, when you said we should do an episode about magical thinking, I was like, yeah. And then we had to like really think about what it means. And we had to look it up and try to figure out the difference between like hope and wishful thinking and superstition and faith and prayer and magical thinking. It's they're all kind of together or versions of one another.
Right.
But one thing I remember, and I remember when I first learned the phrase magical thinking. I was probably in my maybe early 20s. And my mind just kind of blew up. And I was like, oh my God, that is what I have been doing all of my life. Magical thinking. Thinking that wanting something enough, being good enough, feeling like if I do certain things and I'm deserving enough, then it's going to give me this thing that I think that I want. And I operated on that theory for years, long past my childhood. And I was like, shit, that's a thing. Like magical thinking's like a
right?
thing.
You're not alone.
Yeah. It's like a pathology in some ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So tell me about your magical thinking.
I always, you know, when I was little, children do it, you know, step on a crack, break your mother's back, hold your breath when you go past a cemetery or bad things will happen. And I kind of believed it, you know, when I was young. But then the most detrimental period of me having magical thinking as an adult, as a grown ass adult, okay, like 40s, okay,
yeah,
was
yeah.
after my divorce, and I got into a hot mess of a relationship, and I was so, it was so all consuming, this relationship, and just every ounce of my energy and hope and it went into this thing that was never going to happen, you know, into this absolute train wreck of a relationship. But I would just hang in there, and I would think that we talked about signs, right?
Mm-hmm,
And I'm trying to figure out the difference between, because I do believe that I am sent signs, at least in the beginning of my mother's, after she passed.
Yes.
And you can rewind to that episode if you'd like. But what is the difference between, and maybe we can talk about it, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm really even totally clear on it. What is the difference between that and seeing signs, trying to hang on to something and hope that something is going to turn around, a relationship is going to turn around, and staying in it, there's no evidence whatsoever. There's nothing in this history that is pointing to that this is going to work out, this relationship. But then I would see a little sign. And a lot of times it was this person's last name, which
mm-hmm.
wasn't an uncommon last name, but it wasn't a common name
mm-hmm.
either.
Mm-hmm.
But I would see it everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I thought I saw it everywhere. And so I would be like, is that a sign that I need to hang in there? And I would believe this. This is like, I'm in my late 40s, and I would see these things or hear a song and think, oh, that's the universe telling me to hang in there, that this is all going to be okay, turn around, you know? And it just was fiction. I was just hanging on to, I had nothing that was real to lead me to the conclusion that this relationship was working or going to work So I had to resort to nonsense to be able to justify staying in it.
Huh. Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot to think about and a lot to parse out. Yeah, I mean, I think, God, I don't know what I think. But I witnessed some of this relationship, and it seemed to me that early on, there was some evidence. I mean, there was an expression of love from him. There was...
Was there?
I thought
so. What was I telling you? I was probably telling you a bunch of bullshit. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, well, maybe you were.
Or believing my bullshit, right. And then telling you my bullshit.
Okay.
You know, and you...
Yeah.
You know, the breadcrumbing. Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
No, the breadcrumbing that happens where it's like bad behavior, bad behavior, bad treatment, bad treatment, bad treatment. Ooh, here's a little crumb for you. When they sense that you're pulling away and that you might jump ship, then it's like, oh, let me give you this little morsel of all the cake I gave you in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, here's a little crumb for you, and then you stay.
So what's the difference between, in this situation, a woman's magical thinking and this particular person's narcissism and, you know, total selfish motivation? I mean, does one lead... I mean, do they attract each other? Does a narcissist attract somebody who's willing to believe most things? I mean, you know, it's murky to me. It's murky to me.
About how...
Like, he was a narcissist, fuck, right? He was a horrible narcissistic person. Is that something separate from your magical thinking? Or is that something that depends upon magical thinking?
Maybe it does. I absolutely believe that you have to resort to magical thinking to stay in these relationships.
Yeah.
Or if you don't, then you're faced with nothing but a spreadsheet of offenses. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's actual shit that happened, you know? Yeah. So let me go pretend that this thing is saying, you know, this sign that I think I'm seeing, you know, that's a sign. You know what I mean? That's the universe telling me it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
There's no logic to it. And when you're in these relationships, up is down and down is up, and magical is possible, you know, and it's just, you're just in a tornado.
I think the other thing that makes it hard to figure out what's real or not, especially in the beginning of a relationship, is that love, or what we think is love at the time, those feelings, there's nothing rational about love. There's nothing reasonable about love. So you see something that you take as a sign, but nothing in the world is making sense because you're feeling all these feelings.
Remember our episode about limerence? Because that's not love. You used the word love.
Well, but we that think we're is in love. Not yeah. love. No, it isn't.
And love is over time.
Yeah.
You know, it is something that happens over time.
Yeah.
You know, I do not believe in love at first sight anymore.
Yeah. And no, God, no. I have been that a long
and
time.
And I did.
Yeah.
Like, I did.
So, I was married once before, and it was a very destructive relationship. And I think I did some magical thinking, and I certainly thought that, I think I believed in love at first sight at that time. Because I remember the first time...
What a bunch of bullshit.
Oh, it was total bullshit. I remember seeing him and actually physically feeling faint.
Yes.
I was feeling...
Absolutely.
Faint. I hadn't spoken
Ditto.
To him.
Ditto.
Hadn't spoken to him. Hadn't... No communication. Nothing. I saw him and I felt
that
faint.
That is danger.
Yeah.
Is that...
Well,
ladies, girls, and guys, I guess, but more ladies, because I'm convinced that 90% of...
Yeah, we drink the Kool-Aid much more.
Yeah. If you feel that way without any evidence that this person is a good person, run.
And I didn't. And my best friend at the time met him. and said to me privately, I have a really, really bad feeling about this guy. And I was like, oh no, I mean, he's unusual and he's a little standoffish and, you know, and I couldn't think about that. And 6 months later, I married him. And it was, I held on to some magical thinking for quite a while, and I had a...
Like how?
You know, it's hard to decide what was naivety, what was wishful thinking, what was hopeful thinking, but I needed to believe that he was good. I needed to believe that whatever he was, I could fix. I needed to believe that, I needed to believe that I would eventually feel for him what I knew I should be feeling for him. But when I was about to walk down the aisle, I thought, oh my God, at least I can get a divorce. And I did, ultimately. But I, you know, when we were in the thrift store, we were talking about, you were talking about how you didn't want to go back to your home in when you were in college. And you talked about that in the last episode. I mean, I married this man. I had been in a long-term relationship with my first boyfriend, my college boyfriend. I'd been in a long-term relationship with him. And I wanted to get married. And I wanted to have a child. And I wanted to at least move in with him. And he wouldn't budge on any of that. And I was not going to beg. And I met this other guy, and I was like, okay, this guy will give that to me. Because I didn't have the strength to live on my own. I wanted to get out of my parents' house, because at that time I was 20. I mean, I was going to college, but I was going to college, you know, 20 minutes away. So I never went away to school, which is a regret of mine. But I needed to get out of the house, but I didn't find, I knew there was no other way I could get out of the house, but if I met a guy, that would be a legitimate way for me to get out of the house. And it would give me this new way to focus my energy. And it ended up in years of, you know, suicidal rumination, years of really bad stuff. I mean, luckily it wasn't a very long marriage, but it was 4 years longer than it should have been. And it was only 4 years long, you know. Yeah.
It's hard when you... And then there's the sunk cost fallacy. Do you know what that is?
No
that
idea.
Is...
How much you've invested or something?
You've invested so much in something that to walk away is like... It's like someone sitting at a slot machine.
Yeah.
I feel like we've talked about this before, but it's like someone sitting at a slot machine and you have dumped so much into this machine, into this shit show,
yeah.
You know, and you have just so much energy, time, resources,
identity,
money, identity, pride, you know,
it was pride for me.
You've just that to walk away. It's like,
it's humiliating. It's
any
painful.
Any second, it's going to turn around, you know? And then if I walk away, I've lost all of that, you know? And, oh my God, my advice to anybody out there is freaking look for those red flags because they are there. You cannot see them.
Yeah.
And if your friends tell you that there's something wrong,
Fucking
listen. You know, if someone who you love and trust is is like, ooh, you know, pay attention to that.
And don't get married in your 20s.
Don't ever do it. Oh, my God.
If you have to get married or you're going to get married, don't do it in your 20s.
No, I tell my kids.
40s,
I tell my kids.
Late 30s.
Oh. I've told them don't get married before you're 30.
Not
don't
50.
Get married. Don't get married.
Live in sin as long as you possibly can. Live in sin.
For me, live in a different house and go home at the end of the evening.
Yeah. How's that Johnny Walker going down?
Going down like a treat.
And we've had a couple of brownies. And just so our listeners know, these brownies are just straightforward Duncan Hines. There's nothing fancy in these brownies or illegal in these brownies.
That's coming later. And it ain't illegal. I got a subscription. I mean a prescription.
So, I think for me, thinking about how magical thinking also has to do with hope, wishing, faith, prayer, I know there's a big difference.
But it's hard to explain what that difference is.
It's hard. And it may be that some things are good for you, at least in the short term, and some things aren't. Like magical thinking, if you're a grown up, there's no happy ending to any of that. Whereas hope... wishful thinking, maybe, but hope can be a good thing. But, you know, positive thinking. So here's the thing. I have some people around me who are very, their first thought is negative. It's just negative, negative, negative. You know, here's $1 million. Yeah, but it's, $1 million is dirty. You know, it's like, it's got dirt on it.
So you can't buy nothing with a million dollars.
Well, here's $1,001,000. Well, that, you know. And so my immediate impulse is, look at all the things that you can buy with $1 million, you know? And so I'm on top of it, trying to like make it become a positive thing. And I think sometimes when people witness this around me, they have one of two reactions. They're like, look at Kelly trying to make things better, or look at Kelly who's just really deluded, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's annoying, but I think it's a habit in part because I think, you know, there were depressed people around me as a child, and I wanted people to be happy. You know, I wanted to be Snow White. I wanted people to be happy, and I needed to tell stories about how to make things happy. And I do believe that if you don't have any control, mm-hmm. and you've got two options, and one is to think that everything's going to go to shit, and one is to think that things might turn around. I say, think that things might turn around, you know? Because thinking things are going to shit is going to make you miserable. And the fact is, you don't have any control anyway. So I say, go for the good thing. But positive thinking that is positive thinking for its own sake makes me nauseous. I don't like it. You know, this happened for a reason. This happened... I'm very uncomfortable with that.
I think positive thinking when it's backed up with action, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, if it's lighting a fire under your ass, mm-hmm. you know, to do something that is going to get you that thing that you want, you know, that your wish.
Yeah.
But if you are... if all of the evidence in front of you, you can't positive think your way out of a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that's all we got on that one. The chickens are fine. They're not in the oven. They are in their coop. What are they? Who are they? One's Dolly, right?
Yeah, Dolly Parton. And then Cher and Britney Spears and Lady Gaga.
I'm so offended that there isn't a chicken named Kelly. Wasn't there a chicken at one point named Kelly?
Yeah, that was the first batch that I ended up giving to my cousin.
Is Kelly still alive?
I don't know. Kelly's probably
she's probably like food. A nugget somewhere.
She's a coyote nugget.
Oh, shit. Okay, you want more whiskey?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back.
So, and I'm back. I had a whiskey, but I got my Courvoisier.
Courvoisier. Do you remember? Is that the one that smells like gum?
Do you remember Saturday Night Live? The ladies' man?
The Christopher Walken guy?
No, it was the black guy.
No.
He was the ladies man.
No,
and he would be like, I'm here with my Courvoisier. Yeah.
No, I don't remember that. Okay. So here's the thing about wishful magical thinking. And that is that it only lasts for so long. Unless you're really unlucky and you like die, you know, of old age still magically thinking something. I imagine that happens. Lots of old women.
Like I think that there are people who, because if you take it too far, I mean, it's actually in the DSM-5 mm-hmm. as a symptom of schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. So I imagine there's people who die who, you know, everything's a spectrum, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. I imagine there's people who die thinking some crazy bullshit's going to turn around for them, or...
I was going to say something, but let me say something while you mentioned the DSM-5.
Mm-hmm. For those who don't know mm-hmm. what that is the, what would you call that?
It's a diagnostic tool, handbook, whatever.
It's like the Bible for psychiatrists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember going through a rough patch in my life. This was maybe, I don't know, six, seven years ago. I was talking to my physician at the time, a psychiatrist, and we were talking about a medicine shift.
a medicine shift. That gin
hit. Yeah, we're talking about something besides gin as medicine. And I was telling him about this like energy, this kind of manic energy. And we were trying to figure out, you know, do I actually have full-fledged mania and so forth? And we didn't, you know, we agreed that I did not have full-fledged mania. But I was telling him about how I had seen, what was the sign? I said, and then, you know, and I think it was about somebody. It might've been a sign of a dead friend or dead family member. Mm-hmm. And I said something like, you know, and this psychiatrist is so nice, this wonderful, gentle, calm Indian gentleman who always listened, okay, Kelly, what do you say? What are you thinking? You know, always kind. But he never wrote anything down, and I except at the very end. And then I said something about, you know, and then I looked out and I saw this thing, and he wrote it down. He wrote down this sign that I saw, and because he never wrote anything down. And what I realized is he wrote down something that was potentially diagnostic that he would later use.
What do you mean? Like you were looking out the window and saw something?
I was remembering something. I was talking about this mood that I had been in, and I was remembering something, and I was saying something, you know, for example, I was saying something, yeah, and then I saw this cardinal, and this cardinal was just like, and it was clearly, this cardinal was clearly, you know, my uncle, you know? And he was like,
you don't actually remember the thing, though.
I don't remember the thing, but that's the kind of thing it was. Yeah, yeah. But it was something that, I mean, I wasn't hallucinating. Right. It was just like a sign. But he marked it down as something. It was clear that
it was noteworthy.
And I'm like, dude, come on. It was just a sign. Okay, anyway, the thing about magical thinking, in my experience, is that, right, you may die a very old woman in your bed still thinking that someone's going to kiss you and wake you up before you die. Your last right. breath.
Take
your
oh,
last
God, breath. I'm so glad right. I don't think like that.
No, you don't.
No. About love anyway.
Right.
Like I am 100% okay.
Yeah.
Dying single.
Right.
Like I never thought that I would get to that place.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm truly not looking. And if someone were to drop into my lap, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not against it being a woman.
I'm going to go sit over there.
Okay. Back to you. All right. Okay. I'm daring.
No. I totally get that. Eventually the veil falls away. The curtain is parted. You know, the wizard is revealed. And you have to face the reality, or you don't face the reality, but if you want to live well, I think you try to face the reality of like, oh my God, I've been fooling myself. I've been fooling everybody around me. And I had right. this episode in my life, and it was in this first marriage, and I had left, and then I went back, and I thought I was going to be this, I wasn't the one that needed to change, but I thought I'm going to be a changed person and make this marriage work. You know, I didn't think it was the husband.
You thought anyway. You could control it.
Well, I just wanted it to work because, not because I wanted it to work, but because it was going to cause so many people so much pain if it didn't work. It wasn't about me. I don't think. I mean, deeply it was about
me. But what would it have? Or is that you?
Oh, it was me.
Thinking.
It was me thinking. It was me being responsible for all the seven dwarves, you know.
Right.
Right. So anyway.
And they would have all gotten over it, like, probably quickly.
Oh, the ex-husband had, like, a woman half his age in a bikini on his front yard playing Frisbee, like, the next day. So, yeah, yeah. So there was a lot of energy spent on my end. But anyway, we were out in a field. There was a concert. We were in a tent, and it was in the morning. And we had just gotten back together. I had just come back. And he went to kiss me. And there was something about his movement toward me that lifted the veil for me. And I realized, oh my God, I've been fooling myself. I've been fooling everyone around me. And if I continue to live like this, I will die. I have to do something. And I still dream of that moment. I dream of that feeling in my stomach.
It was a kiss that was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
A poison kiss.
A poison kiss. And it was this epiphany. I knew all along, but there was something, everything aligned. I mean, I had known the truth, of course. I had known the truth. Mm-hmm. But that moment, the reality was unmistakable, and I decided to look at it. And when I looked at it, I was just like, oh, shit. And I still dream of that feeling and of that person. I still dream of that because it was so, I mean, it impacted my life so dramatically. And
like
it's
visceral.
It's still deep in my nervous system, because when I have this dream, I have the same feeling over and over again.
Right. It's so interesting that we were talking about fairy tales, and this is like a reverse kiss.
Oh, you know what I mean? So rather than waking her up, it's like it wakes her up in a different way.
It wakes her up in a different way.
Right.
It wakes her up to
not you.
This is not going to be a happy ending. You know what I mean? There is that. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
it's in reverse. Like, you know,
you're so smart.
I am.
I know.
That's why I'm a writer. That's why you're a writer.
Oh, whatever. I don't have time to write anymore. Anyway, tell me about your epiphany when your magical thinking ended in this particular relationship.
It's more, there were many times that I would come to the surface and be so clear about how this is not going to work. You know what I mean? But then the nature of a trauma bond with a narcissist and an empath, which I am.
You're using some fancy words here.
Yeah, yeah. A narcissist is just...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Parasites. But, like, there's a trauma bond that happens. Okay. And you don't... Your nervous system, like you said, mm-hmm. is fucked.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you are in... You are in survival mode. You know? Emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even... I don't know. It's just, it's awful to be in a relationship with a narcissist. But one of the times that I had a moment of clarity, it wasn't the end of the relationship, because I would be able to fool myself again, you know, over and over and over. But one of the moments where my blood ran cold with this is actually a really bad person, you know, like, I travel a lot. I love travel. And I was about to go on a trip, and this person did not want me to go on that trip and was causing all this drama, you know, before, to try and derail my trip. And then 2 days before the trip, I'm at his house. And I go to leave, and my wallet is gone. All my credit cards, my ID, gone. I tore that house up from one end to the other. He was looking. Other people were looking. I went to a couple places that we had been earlier, even though I knew that it wasn't there. You know, And I had, there's this little thing in my head going, he stole my wallet. You know what I mean? So that I can't go on the trip. You know, luckily I had 2 days to run to the DMV to arrange, because I had no credit card. How am I going to go overseas with no freaking credit card?
Yeah.
You know, and so I was able to kind of fix it all, but it was a shit show for two days trying to unfuck not having ID and a credit card before an international trip.
Yeah.
But then one of our many breakups, you know, happened, and then they hoover you back in by, I don't know, they you take these breaks. It's a cycle. It's a very predictable pattern, you know, and we had broken up, and then it was Hoover time, you know, for him. And he sent me, you know, an email saying, I found your wallet with a picture of it. And I was like, I fucking knew it, you know. And
where did he say he found it?
Under a thing under that a I thing. Looked under a million times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no way that it was under there. There's no way that you found it there, because I looked there a million times.
Did you say that out loud, or did you just think it?
No, I emailed it, you know, because our whole relationship was text. Okay. Don't ever, ever, ever get in a relationship where all your conversations are in text.
Yeah, bad idea.
That is just awful. If I were ever to date again, which I'm not, but if I were, I'd be like, let's hop on Skype, buddy. You know what I mean? Like, right out of the gate. Yeah. None of this back and forth. Yeah. There's just so much editing you can do, so much manicuring of your texts and stuff, and it's just a bad way to communicate. But I don't know. I buried it. This shit went on for another 2 years after that. And
I don't remember you guys lasting that long. It was just off and on.
Well, it was like a 6 to 8 week cycle.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was just...
It's like your period. Well, that's not 6 to 8 weeks, though. That's like a menopausal period.
I'm menstruating again. He's back. I need some Lidol. Oh, my God. What was my point?
I don't
what
remember.
What were we talking about? I don't
6
know.
6 to 8 weeks.
No, like, what's the now, podcast about?
Your only boyfriend. Your only boyfriend is Johnny Walker or Cavassier.
Right. Okay, final thoughts on magical thinking. Go.
Magical thinking is useful when you're a kid. It gives you a nice escapism. It gives you, it protects you when things don't feel especially safe. It's fun when you're little, and it's not too harmful when you're little. But when you're older, there is no room for it. It's only gonna lead to like pain and heartache.
Absolutely. My thoughts exactly. Magical thinking. Stop it.
Stop.
That shit's not real. Look at the evidence, okay? Quit looking at fairy tales and bullshit and it's not real.
Who's look at the evidence. Curtain?
Yeah. Look at the evidence.
Here's to evidence.
Here's to evidence. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Burn the Instructions. It would really help us out if you could like, share, and follow, subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss anything, and email us at burntheinstructions@gmail.com or join our Facebook page. We would love to hear your feedback, and let us know if you have any favorite fairy tales or if you have any experience with magical thinking. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any suggestions for topics, we would love to hear them. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.